I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. On September 5th, President Trump announced he'd end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program in March, and he called on lawmakers to come up with a solution before then. Now, hundreds of thousands of Dreamers, children brought here without documentation, are left with their futures in doubt. Today, a local advocate and an area DACA recipient tell us how they're moving forward. We'll also check in with people on the ground in Florida and Puerto Rico about relief and recovery efforts in the wake of Hurricanes Irma and Maria. And it wouldn't be Thursday without Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. We all know that the Trump administration is shutting down DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, in just a few months. But what does that mean exactly for area dreamers, people who have lived in the U.S. since at least 2007, but were brought to this country without documentation as children? As questions about their status grows, dreamers have been left to watch our national leaders bargain over their futures. The latest news suggests that the White House wants Democrats to sign off on a wish list of immigration policies in exchange for protecting these hundreds of thousands of young people brought into the country illegally. With us now to talk about what the president's DACA deadline means for area dreamers are Diana Martinez. She's the lead DACA coordinator for the Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance. Diana, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having us.
Zaid Consuega is the DACA recipient and a local business owner. Zaid, nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, how much confusion is there out there right now, Zaid?
I think there's a lot. At least for me personally, I can speak that it has thrown me out of my game.
In what sense?
Personally, you know, it has rocked my world. Just the not knowing what's to come. That has put a lot of pressure on me, anxiety. As far as my business, I think it has. I've tried my best not to have it suffer, but for the most part, I think it has lost a little bit. At least it's been hit a little bit.
And what is your business?
So I own a coffee shop called Pirate's Bone. We're in the Brookside area.
Mm-hmm. Diana, what are you seeing and what are you hearing from DACA recipients in the metro here?
There's definitely a lot of fear and, like Zaid said, anxiety within the community and the DACA mm-hmm. recipients. You know, everyone has hopes and dreams, and a lot of these recipients are high school students or are already in the workforce. So not knowing whether they're going to be able to go to college or continue in the workforce that they're in currently is creating a lot of anxiety. But there's also definitely also hope and resilience because we've learned from the past.
I was going to say DACA recipients know a whole lot about hope and resilience, right? That's what their lives have been all about in some ways.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Definitely.
You know, Zaid, I'm wondering what it's like watching Washington haggle over DACA these days, because what's happening there could directly affect the arc of your life. And I imagine you're watching the news very closely these days.
Oh, yeah. I was a big fan of watching the news either way, you know, on a daily basis. But now it's more of a church. So I'd watch it in the morning. I'll watch it at night. I listen to NPR. Because the little things, you know, tend to add up. Little comments here and there by senators tend to lead, you know, to big facts.
Mm-hmm. And based on what you're hearing, how hopeful are you that there's going to be some sort of settlement reached or a resolution reached by the deadline that will help people like you?
I'd like to say that I'm hopeful, but I've been here 20 years, and I did hear from a senator say that we are a sort of like a chess game. Mm-hmm. Where we go back and forth, depending who's up for presidency, they'll throw in the immigration word around and say they'll fix something. But again, I've been here for 20 years and nothing has been done. So I am a dreamer. I guess that kind of comes out of it. I do want the Dream Act to pass, and that'd be amazing. But I can't say that I have, that I'm sure that it's something will happen.
Are you angry? Are you frustrated about all this?
No, I'm not angry or frustrated. I get what's going on. I get what happened. I get that we came here illegally. But I also get the humanitarian side of it. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, I know I didn't have a choice. I know a lot of people didn't have a choice. And
yeah, as... Tell our listeners why you didn't have a choice.
Well, I was 11 years old when I came. So I came from Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
So I was born there. I came and my mom just, you know, said that we were moving. And a customer before I left the coffee shop asked me, like, oh, my story. And I was like, listen, like, I didn't have a choice. My mom said we're moving and we were moving. That's it. That was end of discussion. I didn't have a say on this topic.
What if someone said to you, well, then you should have moved back once you became a legal adult and gotten things straightened out and then come back in legally?
Sure, and I've heard that a lot. But the thing is, at that point, whether we liked it or not, we had made our lives here.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you more about the history of this country than I could about Mexico. That's really sad. I want to know more about the home, you know, my home country. But the fact is, we're here. Whether we like it or not, it has been our home for so many years
mm-hmm.
that we're rooted into it.
Diana, I bet you've heard this a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, going back and trying to come back in legally, there is no process. There's a 10-year wait, especially for people from Mexico and Central America. It would be uprooting your whole life here. And trying to rely on a system that's broken and that has no path for us.
Mm-hmm. And that's just the stark reality.
Yeah.
You know, the Dream Act, according to McClatchy newspapers, is essentially being used as this bargaining chip to get concessions that Republicans are seeking on immigration. What do you make of that?
I mean, honestly, it's true. Once the Dream Act was passed, or I'm sorry, once DACA was passed, people said, oh, well, there you go. You have something. We don't have to keep fighting. You don't have to keep fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now that's also what they're going to try to do in passing the Dream Act. They're just going to say, oh, well, you know, we did as much as we could, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But we need more than that. We need protection for our families and our friends, not just...
And you want a long-term solution here, Diana. Does that go without saying?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. But I think right now, unfortunately, we do have to focus on what we can get right now. But that doesn't mean we're going to stop fighting for a more long-term solution.
Mm-hmm. How are you fighting?
So Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance. I'm part of Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance, which is a youth-led organization working in Kansas and Missouri.
You're the coordinator for it, right?
So I'm the coordinator for the DACA scholarships.
Okay.
So right now, our main focus has been on DACA and we helping the DACA recipients. We've been holding clinics for them to be able to renew and providing free legal assistance. And recently, we got funds from United We Dream, which Zaid here is a... recipient of that for scholarships for the renewal fee because the Department of Homeland Security charges
$495. $495 to renew your DACA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is a lot of money and a lot of people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been hosting DACA clinics. We have one coming up on Sunday and Tuesday. And
there's a big rush for this right now because there's a big deadline coming up in just a few days, right?
Yeah,
what is that deadline?
The deadline is October 5th.
For
the people that are able to renew their DACA. And that's only just a few people because it has to have – their DACA has to have expired between now and March 20.
It's going to be March 5th.
March 5th of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very small window for people to be able to renew their DACA. And also a very small window of the expiration date.
And renewal then, a successful renewal would give a recipient how much time?
Another 2 years.
Another 2 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Saeed, where are you in that process?
So I was fortunate to have my DACA expire in December. But here's the thing with DACA. We are able to renew, and it's amazing. It was an amazing gift. But it wasn't enough. Like, mm-hmm. we're still so underrated and so underappreciated. We aren't able to get jobs. It's a few jobs. I mean, there's jobs that will turn you down, which is still illegal to turn someone down because of DACA. But I have heard stories of jobs turning people down because they have DACA.
Employers might think, what, I've only got you for 18 months or I've only got you for a year, so why should I take a risk on you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be the same thing with other facts of life. When I went to get my driver's license, you know, they didn't know what DACA was or why my Social Security number had, you know, limited terms only or for work purposes only. So they questioned that, and I was there for hours waiting for them to figure out what it was and if it was a true Social Security number. Never mind that, put on top credit cards. I can't get a credit card. Some banks will not allow those Social Security numbers. They're just a little bit different than your normal Social Security number.
So what would happen to you if your time in this country came to an end, Saeed? What happens? What'll happen to you?
Okay, so the first thing that will happen is that, let's just start with driver's license. I won't be able to drive. Because if I drive, I'm back in the whole looking over my shoulder and hoping that I don't get pulled over, hoping that I don't go to jail. Because then when you go to jail as an illegal immigrant, it's very shady. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd like to say that the laws are strict, and they are strict, but then there's a lot of shadiness when it comes to ICE and immigration. You're kept in, you know, in jail for a long time. Sometimes you don't get your calls. It is very corrupt and very biased because of immigration. Mm-hmm. So what do I...
You're sort of a low person on the totem pole. Am I hearing
that man, correctly? All of us are like drawing the short stick. And it's horrible because most of the DACA recipients that I know are working class, young professionals that have been working all their life and put in a lot more effort than most people that I know.
And suddenly they're in jail.
Yeah.
Not for a crime per se, a violent crime, but something very different than that.
Yeah. So our lives would be turned upside down. I don't know what would happen to me. Yes, I think I would survive it. And yes, I think I would move on and probably move out of this state, out of the country. But I don't get why I have to have that choice. Mm-hmm. Why I need a choice to, you know, live a life of an illegal immigrant here again or go to a different country, period. I think that's just very harsh.
You know, Diana, a new poll out this week from NBC News and the Wall Street Journal showed that 53% of all Americans want lawmakers to extend DACA. What did you make of that? And to what extent is that a shot in the arm here?
I mean, giving the country's political climate, it's not a shot. It's probably very accurate to say 50% of Americans support immigrants. I think that's great, but what we need more is support and action from Congress. Mm-hmm. And that would be the 53% people pushing their Congress people to give us a legislation that one protects undocumented youth, and that there's no gap from protection.
Yeah.
Once their DACA expires, but also, you know, protection for all immigrants, for all families.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about DACA with a recipient and a coordinator of a local DACA program and what this means for folks who are DACA recipients here. A couple of technical questions here, Diana. Those who have received DACA, are they all in danger of losing it right away now?
No. So it's going to phase out depending on the person's expiration date. So it wasn't just cut off immediately to where everyone doesn't have it. If you have DACA, it's still valid until your expiration date.
Okay, and this deadline of getting renewals applied for of October 5th, Homeland Security has already said we're not changing that date, right? We're going to stick with it. It's hard.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Does sending in your DACA renewal application on time guarantee that it'll be renewed?
We are hoping that is what they've told us, that it would luckily the department has been, their turnover has been pretty quickly on the renewals, people getting it between at least three weeks, when before they would take months for the applications to be accepted.
Right. I'm also wondering, Zaid, to what extent are your liberties curtailed if you're a dreamer right now? I mean, can you travel abroad? Can you travel domestically? What do you face?
So that's been one of my biggest sorrows, that I love to travel. I haven't been in my home country in 20 years now. And I have...
Because
I can't travel outside the U.S., which means I can't travel... The places I could travel were Puerto Rico, which unfortunately right now it's, you know, got hit really bad, and mm-hmm. I have family there, and it's an amazing place. It's so lovely, and it was heartbreaking for me to hear this whole DACA ending, because now, even though I have DACA, it is uncertain for me to go and travel to Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't even take that risk to travel to an island where I have friends and family.
We're going to talk about Puerto Rico in our second half here today. Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't travel anywhere but in the States. And without DACA, I wouldn't even be able to travel within the States.
Hmm. So you've been hamstrung for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. It's not an easy place to be at. And it feels like it feels somewhat of a caged animal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Diana, what is the Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance? And what else is it doing right now to help?
So, like I mentioned before, it's a youth-led organization, and we work to educate, advocate, and provide students, and more specifically undocumented students, with the resources to be able to achieve their higher educational goals,
because
mm-hmm. There's not a lot of support out there for the undocumented youth. And so we've been doing the DACA clinics, but we're also... Moving forward, we're going to be calling on members of Congress to pass legislation that does protect the immigrant youth and their families.
I was going to say, do we know how many Dreamers approximately that we have in the metro area right now?
Unfortunately, we don't have that number.
Mm-hmm. Rough guess?
I would say at least a couple thousand.
A couple hundred thousand?
Couple thousand.
Okay.
But that's just out of shooting in the air.
Saeed, how can residents, whether they're dreamers or not, get involved in an issue like this? What would you like to see happen?
You know, I'd like to see people talk about this, because mm-hmm. there is a lot of misinformation. So as long as you talk to people and deceive, you know, get those urban myths out of the way, because that's what a lot of things are right now. Urban myths, the fact that, you know, there's a lot of things we can do. So just talk about it to understand.
Diana?
Yeah, so that's another thing that Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance has been doing. We've been going to schools and going to just anywhere we can go where people will accept us to talk about what DACA is, to talk about what the DREAM Act is, to talk about what's going on in the immigrant community. And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/KSMODA to see how you can help, to see what events are coming up next.
Okay. Well, thank you both for a good conversation. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having us.
That's Diana Martinez. She's the lead DACA coordinator for the Kansas-Missouri Dream Alliance. Saeed Consuegra is a DACA recipient and a local business owner. Again, thank you both very much for a good conversation.
Thank you.
I mentioned we're going to check in on recovery efforts in Puerto Rico. We're going to do that with KCUR's Frank Morris in just a couple of minutes. And we'll talk about Florida as well with folks from Heart to Heart International based here in the metro. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's program, we asked a panel of young people their thoughts on American values and if adults are living up to them. You can hear that conversation at kcur.org and on the NPR One app. Tomorrow, our indie, foreign, and documentary film critics are back to discuss which films you should see and which ones you can avoid. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, sometimes when we think about rebuilding after a major storm, we think about basics such as getting the power restored and the home rebuilt. But the story is different in parts of Florida and Puerto Rico, where something even more basic is at stake, and that's survival. We begin our coverage this morning by talking to KCUR's Frank Morris, who's been reporting this week for NPR down in Florida. Frank, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
The other day, you reported from Immokalee, Florida, where a former migrant farm worker had set up an impromptu aid station for farm workers who had lost their homes and livelihoods to Hurricane Irma. That farm worker is Fernando Sanchez, an electrician from the Tampa area. What did Fernando Sanchez, why did he set up that aid station, Frank?
Yeah, he just knew that how rough it is for people with no resources to have their, and you know, living in crummy old trailers, to just have their not only their livelihood but their homes ripped out from under them. So I mean, he grew up working in the fields, and then he just had this idea, and it mushroomed. They knew where to set up the aid station, so people would see it and be comfortable there. And when they set up their little place, all kinds of other people who were, you know, like coming down from Minnesota and everything else, just, you know, pulled in next to them because they were having such success drawing a crowd.
You know, you reported that when you pulled into Immokalee that it looked like a little festival was going on. Describe that scene for us.
You're driving into a town that it got whacked really, really hard by the hurricane. So, you know, all the signs are busted. There's big piles of debris. And this has been everywhere I've been in Florida, which, you know, is down southwest Florida and then now out to the Keys. You're seeing, you know, I mean, you've seen these on TV and a million times. It's different when you see them in person. So, you know, these piles of, you know, furniture, cabinets, appliances, you know, just heaps of, you know, concrete block, all rotting on the side of the street. And by the way, I'm told that they've been doing a pretty good job of picking this stuff up. So these, when you see those piles, sometimes that's the third or fourth pile that people have come out with. So there's that kind of scene. There's a lot of standing water. And then you come around the corner, and then there's this little thing going on, you know, with a bunch of, you know, huge puddles around it. But it, you know, there's smokers and you know, his grills, a little tents or canopy set up, all kinds of people, and a really a festive atmosphere.
I'm talking to Frank Morris, who works for KCUR. He's down in Florida reporting on hurricane damage for NPR. You know, Frank, you've seen tornado damage during your career and flooding damage. I'm wondering, how does Florida compare?
You know, that's an interesting question, Steve. I mean, you don't see, you know, like with a tornado, it looks like stuff's been kind of through a blender and it's just shredded.
Right.
So you don't really see that exactly, but man, is it ever widespread down here. I mean, it is kind of localized, like in the Keys here on the ocean side, you know, the south side of the islands, they just got bombed. I mean, you know, you're talking about big pieces of concrete moved up, you know, 20, 30 feet from where they started at, and you know, huge sections of the infrastructure is blown out. They got like a 4-foot storm surge across most of here, so that completely ruined anybody who's living on the first floor, which are, you know, a lot of the older houses. And so it is just so, it just goes on and on and on. It gets worse as you get closer to where the eye went through. And there you start, you know, in addition to all the appliances and stuff, you see, start to see big piles of sand. I mean, enormous piles of sand and gigantic rubble piles. They're like rubble collections, like, as, I don't know, 30 feet tall and about the size of a block, you know.
Why the piles of sand, Frank?
Driven up by the sea.
Wow.
You know, it was just like there used to be a beach there. Now there's, you know, giant piles of sand that they moved off of the road. You know, so it's, I mean, it's a lot of force here. Boy, just a lot of force. Really, really evident as you drive down the Keys.
You know, Frank, give us a sense of just how desperate this situation is for some people, because for migrant farm workers that you reported on, they lost their homes because they live in these trailer homes that were ripped apart in the storm, and they lost their livelihoods too because the fields where they work were ripped apart too. I mean, it's just, there's nothing left for these folks.
Well, you know, there's cleanup work, and that's helpful. That lasts for so long. There's not going to be, you know, and you know, so the citrus harvest is one thing. That's pretty much shot. I mean, that is in really bad shape, follows years of terrible circumstances in that industry. Vegetables, probably get that back. They were just getting started with vegetables. So, you know, but these are people that don't have any cushion, you know, they don't have a credit card. They don't have, you know, they're not here legally. They don't have, they don't have much support. So they're really hanging out there. You know, you also have farmers who are in pretty serious trouble, depending on what sector they're in and how badly they got hurt. And then I'm down here talking to these fishermen, man. So this guy, you know, and it's not an uncommon story. Guy sleeping on his boat. And this is not a houseboat. This is a fishing boat, a very Spartan boat.
Right.
Sleeping on it because his house was completely ruined. He lost, like, you know, 80% of his lobster traps, which is his only source of income. And the traps that he is finding are beat up and mangled. So it's 7 miles from where he put them. You imagine putting a buoy, a 7-inch buoy, in the Gulf of Mexico and having it get drug and having the trap attached to a drug across the seafloor for 7 miles and then trying to find the thing and hope that there's something worth selling inside. I mean, you know, and that industry here is kind of a bedrock industry. So that got killed this year. They're coming off some good years, but that got killed. Now they're just hoping for a good stone crab season, which starts here in a couple of weeks.
You know, we all have our troubles, Frank, and I'm wondering, when you report on a situation like the one you found in Immokalee, how that affects you personally. Is it one of those things, you know, where you sort of think to yourself, man, I've got it good?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I mean, you just, you know, it's one of those things where you don't, I mean, you know, you live your life and you think, wow, I've got a deadline, or I've got, you know, and then you see people just bucking up. I mean, and, you know, I mean, Immokalee, with the language, you know, I'm kind of an idiot this way, Steve. I don't speak Spanish. I wish I did. It would open up a lot of doors. But, you know, I did spend some time with this lobster boat captain, you know, who has he's lost his traps, he's lost his season, and he lost his house. And and then he busted his prop, which is a 150-pound giant. He's got to go down in the mud with an air tank on and take that thing off, without cutting off his fingers, and get it so he can repair it. That's his day, you know.
Wow.
So
wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It makes you feel very, very fortunate.
Where are you going next, Frank, or are you coming home?
I'm coming back. I've got to finish up this commercial fishing industry story, and if I have time, I want to dart out and do something about the sport fishing industry that got slammed here. They had closed some docks that a bunch of sport charter fishing guys rely on. They're very angry about that, the charter fishing guys. So I'm hoping to get that story in before I head back tomorrow morning.
That's KCUR's Frank Morris reporting for NPR down in Florida. Frank, thanks so much.
Yeah, you bet, Steve.
You bet. Let's turn now to Puerto Rico, the U.S. territory digging out from Hurricane Maria, which remains without power and where food shortages are growing rampant. Joining me now, I think from satellite phone from Puerto Rico, or maybe here locally, is Chief Operating Officer Kim Carroll, who's on the phone at Heart to Heart headquarters here in town. She spent the morning getting 40 pallets of medicines, medical supplies, and hygiene kits ready to ship out. And Kim, good morning to you. You there, Kim? Kim, you there?
Hello?
Yeah,
yes,
hi.
I am.
How are you? Yes.
Hi. Good morning. We're doing well. Thank you.
The supplies you're getting ready to send out here, give us a sense of how many people can be helped with those, because I'm thinking that it may feel like it's just a drop in the bucket.
Well, the supplies that are going out are substantial, but they're only the first shipment. And I think we have to start somewhere. The FedEx truck is actually being loaded as we speak. It's 44,000 pounds of supplies. That's 40 pallets. That's a truckload. And it includes 270,000 meals, hygiene kits, feminine hygiene supplies, bottled water, and water filtration systems.
Can you give us a sense, Kim, of what you're hearing from your colleagues who are in Puerto Rico about what they're up against and just how widespread the damage is there?
Sure. Well, I think Heart to Heart had a very unique view of what was happening on the ground in Puerto Rico, because Dr. Gary Morsch, who actually entered into Puerto Rico via chartered helicopter from Haiti, arrived back on the 24th, so that was last Sunday, and Gary was the first humanitarian aid worker to arrive in Cagua, which is a town about 30 kilometers south of San Juan. What we're seeing on the ground is lack of potable water. There are vast food shortages. People don't have food. They don't have clean water. The hospitals are only partially functioning, if at all. The hospital that Gary's working at currently in Cagua, which is the Menonita de Cagua Regional Hospital, it's a 10-story hospital. They had five floors operating via generator power. Those generators are only able to provide basic life support and light, but no air conditioning, so it's extremely hot, which might be uncomfortable for you and me, but for very ill patients is problematic. There were 111 inpatients in that particular hospital, and the staff had been at the hospital unable to leave since prior to the storm hitting. So the circumstances on the ground are tough. There's very little fuel. People are waiting in line hours, if not overnight, to get access to fuel. So transportation is very difficult. But people are they're working to help one another. There's a lot of collaboration happening with, for example, our team. Gary arrived on Sunday. Our full disaster response team, which was a complement of eight people, including our CEO, Jim Mitchum, our logistics staff, and our medical volunteers, arrived yesterday, and they arrived via cruise ship. The reason we sent them via boat was because air traffic was not getting onto the island. Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines donated meals and rooms for our disaster response team. And most importantly, they told us we could take as much gear on board as we could carry. Well, our eight guys and gals can carry a lot of stuff. So we took on thousands of pounds of survival gear, ready-to-eat meals, MREs,
right,
water, water filtration, generators, and a refrigerator full of medication.
You know, the other day, Kim, President Trump said that Puerto Rico had been destroyed by Hurricane Maria. Is that accurate? I mean, can you see a future for the island right now, again, based on what you're hearing from your colleagues?
Well, I think that certainly the devastation is significant. If we didn't, you know, I think that if people don't think there's a future, you give up hope. And we don't believe that's the case. We're certainly sending volunteers and resources because that's what Heart to Heart does, is we bring hope to people. So we absolutely believe in the people of Puerto Rico. We believe that with the right resources that they will rebuild and they will recover. Life goes on. It's still happening down there. There were people, families expecting new babies. There are women who are in labor. I mean, life is happening down there. It's just happening under really, really, really difficult circumstances. We're going to help make those circumstances better. And Puerto Rico will recover if we help it. And that's what we need to do.
You know,
if we don't deploy aid, yeah, it's going to be a tough place. But they need help, and that's what we should do.
You know, Kim, maybe a final point. Heart to Heart has been at this since Hurricane Harvey hit Houston. Then you responded to Irma hitting the Florida Keys, and now it's Maria and Puerto Rico. Is it the same drill each time at headquarters here, or does what you pack and what you send differ in each circumstance?
A lot of it's similar, and in fact, in some cases, some of the people are similar. So I actually deployed into Texas for Hurricane Harvey, and what we saw with Harvey is that services, power, and water were restored fairly quickly. Within a week, I was there for 3 weeks. Within a week, we were doing pretty well with power and water. Irma, also, while severe, resources restored fairly quickly. We're well past a week now with Maria and Puerto Rico, and it appears that services are much further behind in terms of being restored. But what we take is the same. When our advanced team goes in, we assume we have to operate and survive by our own means. So we take
right.
in MREs, we take in water filtration, sleeping bags, tents. We typically sleep where we work, or we sleep where we can be guests. Our team in Houston in churches.
Kim, I got to cut you off. Let me just ask you one quick question. The seconds I have left here, we don't normally allow for self-promotion on this program, but today's an exception. What can people do to help here?
The best thing that people can do to help is go to our website, go to hearttoheart.org, and donate. 100% of your donation, of their donations, will go to the victims of Hurricane Maria, or they can text 41444 and text HHI to give. And again, 100% of their donations will be deployed to those impacted by the hurricane in Puerto Rico.
That's Chief Operating Officer Kim Carroll from Heart to Heart International Headquarters here in town. Kim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
To my surprise, I did a double backflip and landed on my head. This old cowboy limped out in the arena, leaned over me and said, "You got a cowboy up."
Oh, look who's two-stepping his way into the studio here. Brian McTavish with your weekend to-do list. Welcome back.
Well, howdy, partner.
Nice to change the pace after bad news in Florida, bad news in Puerto Rico. Man, it's hard to hear that
it's
stuff.
It's a shame.
It's a shame.
And we need to do, and we are doing something about it.
Yes, absolutely.
The faster, the better.
Great to contribute to Heart to Heart. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do we have here?
Well, let's try to make it a good weekend. We've got the American Royal Rodeo. A lot of folks are going to be cowboying up. Nobody more so than the cowboys and the cowgirls are going to ride them. If they can hang on, they can hang on to those horses and bulls. And as the song, as the song says here by Chris Ledoux, it really has to do on the horse you draw.
Ah.
I mean, think about it. Now, if you get one that you can stay on, but it's spunky enough that it looks good to the judges, you score big.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, if you fall off, if they're too rough, if they're too gentle, you want to find just that right horsey that you can stay on and look like a champ doing it.
I agree in that. I
absolutely.
Agree with that.
Absolutely. Rodeo times. This is the pro rodeo. 7:30 Friday night, 2 in the afternoon, and 7:30 Saturday night at Hale Arena at the American Royal Complex. There's a youth rodeo that's been going on.
Is this the last year they're doing it down there?
I think so. But anyway, yeah, there's a youth rodeo for amateur young folks, and that's actually happening at noon today. So you got a few minutes to catch that, folks, after you stop listening to Steve and myself. Also, noon Friday is the youth rodeo. Also, mutton busting, that competitive sheep riding for ages 6 and older. Sounds a little crazy, but I guess if the helmet works, wear it. And there's a behind the chutes tour that for a few extra bucks, you can visit with rodeo contestants and entertainers and share grub in the cowboy hospitality area.
Okay.
Always call your name. I'm walking down the one street trying to forget. But after all,
what do we have here?
Oh, it's the I wanna say their name right, but there's a 50-50 chance I won't, so let's take our shot. Those are the wonderfully gifted QB Sisters, award-winning championship fiddlers and vocalists, and they're part of the Kansas Cowboy Jubilee.
That's fun to watch, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. Kansas Cowboy Jubilee, family-friendly celebration of the Western, the old Western way of life, including a free concert by the aforementioned QB Sisters. The fun, and it will be fun, 11 in the morning till 5:30 in the afternoon. It's a day-long event at the Carlson Center at Johnson County Community College, and they'll have scholarly lectures and trick roping and cowboy sing-alongs and barn dancing, and in a standalone event, you can also stick around or just show up later in the evening at JCCC and check out Asleep at the Wheel, Western Swingers Extraordinaire.
And to keep with the theme today, be sure to see Brian's 6 Western things to do in Kansas City this weekend. Just go to kcur.org.
This is time for a shake up. Look at me, wake up. Taking control. This is a new beginning. My gears are spinning. Let's rock and roll.
What do we have here?
Kinky boots.
Kinky boots.
Do you have any kinky boots back home in the closet?
I do not. Need to get some.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, that's something we could do after the show. Let's go shopping for some kinky boots.
Yes.
And you're nodding.
I wouldn't know where to go.
The only way
we'll
to get you to say yes to these things I ask you is to go on the radio and ask them of you.
Otherwise, no.
It's a no.
I got an editorial to write.
It might even be a head shake no. I'm not even sure you'd vocalize, even like waste the time talking to me about that. But in all seriousness or semi-seriousness, it's Kinky Boots. It's that Broadway musical about being yourself, maybe your unusual self, but also finding common ground with others in society. Very catchy, very nice songs by pop queen Cyndi Lauper. It's the last show of the season at Starlight Theater. 3 nights only, 8 o'clock, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. A darn good thing to go do. And if you are wearing stilettos for any reason, like I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Oh, be careful.
Because you can twist an ankle. It's very painful. Trust me, I know.
Cyndi Lauper won a Tony for writing these songs.
Tony Awards. 6 or 7 or 8 Tony Awards. It's actually it's very entertaining, but it, like I said before, it's about the importance of being yourself, being free to be yourself, but not so stridently that you can't work with others around you.
Very good philosophy.
Oh, yes, I agree.
Boy, this does remind me of my old days in Wisconsin. No question about it. Man.
Wasn't Oktoberfest invented in Wisconsin?
It might have been.
Well, I mean,
boy,
they still
play this music up there, and it's fun to hear.
Well, I dare say the Germans had something to do with it.
Yes.
German immigrants, of course.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so we've got Oktoberfest. Where else but in historic Westport?
Wow.
Beers, bands, games.
Polka in Westport. What a concept.
Yes, not just polka. But get this, 5 o'clock it starts tonight, 5 o'clock it starts Friday, all day and night Saturday, Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue. Plenty of polka bands, but get this, you'll also have Hammerhead, that's the KC Kid Metallica cover band.
Mm.
I don't know if they're going to be taking requests. I might ask them to do the Happy Wanderer or something like that. But three young people who are fantastically talented on that hard rock and stage at Oktoberfest all weekend in Westport.
Okay, and finally today. Man, that'll get your weekend pumping. Wow.
I'm moving.
Man.
I'm moving.
Deer Hoof.
That is none other, my friend, than Deer Hoof, or Hoof, if you prefer.
Yeah.
That is their song, Exit Only. But if you're a fan, you are not running to the exits. You're running into the entrance for that far-out rock sound. That's just one of the bands at the locally based Outer Reaches 2017 Festival. Out there, left of center, crazy experimental psychedelic rock, 8 o'clock Friday. Where else but the Record Bar?
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's Brian McTavish with your weekend to-do list. Thanks, man.
Ride'em Cowboy all
Ride'em
weekend.
Cowboy
yeah.
all weekend
all
long.
Right.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date, and follow me at Steve Kraske. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow, the indie documentary and foreign film critics are back to review the hits and misses they're now showing in area screens. Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Justin Garnett produced this show. And I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.